I want to start just by saying something about this image of Avalokiteshvara and what my connection is with him and why I wanted him on the shrine. So the four-armed Avalokiteshvara is an incredible, as an image, it's an incredibly balanced image and just carries with it a very strong sense of stillness and presence, and that's what I tend to connect with this image and with the four-armed Avalokiteshvara. This quality of balance and stillness and presence, and he's like a kind of witnessing presence. He just sees everything, and he's witnessing me, whatever pickle I'm getting myself into. He's witnessing that, and he's showing me how to witness others and to be present for others. And quite often we think that to be really kind of engaged with the world, we need to be doing something, and we do need to do things, but we also need to be a strong presence. I think that's a much stronger quality than we realize. Actually, brings to mind a story. Something that happened years ago, maybe about 6 years ago or something. I went to my mum's for Christmas, and it was the first time I'd been at home at Christmas, if you see what I mean, at my parents' at Christmas for about 17 years, so she was very pleased to have me there. And her mother was there, and her sister was there. Her mother was about 94 at the time, and she got that horrible sickness and diarrhea illness during the night, which is, I mean, it's unpleasant for anybody, but when you're 94, it's really tricky because you just can't move as fast as your body needs you to in order to keep it all in the right place. And she was sleeping downstairs and we were all sleeping upstairs, and we didn't really know what was happening. And when we came downstairs in the morning, my grandmother was naked, sitting by her bed, having stripped off because she'd, soiled herself and everything like that, this very little old lady. And I watched my aunt and my mother go into slight kind of action. They went into action, phoning the doctor, phoning the hospital, opening the windows. I was closing the windows because my grandmother was still naked and it was Christmas Day. And as I left the room while my aunt and my mother were doing things in the lounge, I said to my grandmother, "Just call me if you need me." And a few minutes later, she called me, but I was out of range, and my mother shouted upstairs, "Your grandmother wants you." And I came down and I helped her do whatever she needed to do. And later on, when my mum was apologizing for having invited me for Christmas to the sickness and diarrhea realm, because then I got it and then so did she, sort of thing. She said to me, "Oh, well, it was obviously meant to be because, your grandma called for you, didn't she?" And I thought she did call for me, and that was interesting. And that's because I was the only one showing up. My mother and my aunt were busy doing something else, but I said to my grandma, "Call me if you need me." And it was just that simple. And it was a real teaching for me, actually, that sometimes being present to somebody is actually very simple and doesn't require very much. In fact, it can require an awful lot less than what we think we should be doing, kind of thing. So Avalokiteshvara kind of symbolizes this for me, that quality of presence, and it's just very, very simple. And the thing about being present is, you really do see what's happening. You see things as they are rather than seeing things as we are, which is often how we do see things. We see things filtered and distorted through our own views. So having that quality of presence is actually a wisdom quality. It's a kind of energetic wisdom quality, just being able to be there. Kubler-Ross, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who does a lot of work with the dead, dying, with the dying, and with the dead maybe, she was once asked if she meditated, and she said, "I don't meditate, I find it too dry. What I do is I'm simply present with those that are dying." And that intimacy and that ability to be there is like meditation for me. So it's just very interesting, that whole, well, in a way, that's taking meditation off the cushion, isn't it? That quality of presence. And then I've been thinking about that lovely aphorism of Sangharakshita's, that there are no higher teachings, there are only deeper understandings. It's so well put. And when we're able to be just present to ourselves and to others, the chance, there's a possibility of having a deeper understanding and taking what we know a bit further. In a way, what we're doing is we're moving through the three levels of wisdom. We're seeing or listening, then we're reflecting, and then we're becoming something different. And it's been very clear to me on this retreat how a deeper understanding is a deepening of motivation, and a deepening of motivation is a deepening of understanding. And it's like a kind of spiral of between those two things. Yeah, so this is my own thoughts. So a deeper understanding is a deeper motivation, and a deeper motivation is a deeper understanding. And in a way, it's a purification of motivation, isn't it? It's a purification of that heart wish. As we understand a bit more what we're really trying to do, or what the world needs, that begins to reveal a deeper heart wish. Avalokiteshvara himself carries his own heart wish to his heart, the bodhicitta. And that heart wish is deeper, or goes further than just simply a pleasant life. It's something much more radical than that. So then I found this quote quite a long time ago from Sangharakshita. I can't tell you where I got it from, so I'll just read it out to you. A common misapprehension is to think of insight in abstract terms, but the truth of egolessness simply means being more deeply unselfish. To contemplate egolessness or emptiness as some special experience separate from our actual behaviour leaves it as far away as ever. If you find it difficult to realize the emptiness of the self, the solution is to be a little less selfish. The insight comes after the experience, not before. So it's something that I think about quite a bit, what he's actually trying to get at here. And one of my thoughts this morning is, I think we can have quite simplistic ideas about what it is to be selfish. It's a bit like if we're on our own, we're being selfish, and if we're with others, we're being something else almost. It can be as simple as that even. I've been trying for myself to take that all a bit further, that understanding a bit further. And I've been asking myself at different times, What is it that I'm serving? Is there compulsion? And is this self-limiting? Those are the questions I've been asking myself. There's an image that I've used to describe the Sangha as a coral reef, because I learnt once on a documentary that a coral reef is very susceptible or sensitive to pollution in the sea. And I thought that's what the Sangha's like. It's very susceptible to pollution. And the sangha grows because the sea or the environment is purer. It allows it to grow. And we pollute it by, you know, various actions, thoughts, words. And one of the things I noticed at Taraloka, in my life at Taraloka, is that we as individuals cannot, we've all got skills and qualities, talents or whatever. And sometimes we're serving the situation, we're serving a higher value, we're serving something of meaning. And there's a beautiful atmosphere between us. And sometimes somebody uses their talents, skills, whatever, to serve themselves. And then you see the pollution, and it shows up quite quickly, actually, the way people respond to it, almost unconsciously. And I find it quite a useful reflection. Okay, so that's what's going on right now. Generally, those talents, skills, or whatever are fabulous, but now they've become self-serving, and that just sours it all a little bit. So we need to know what we're serving. I think this is like, this is our heart wish, or this is the wisdom of the heart. And love, which is what we've been maybe developing here this week, love is inseparable from understanding. In a way, it's love is a lack of self-preoccupation. And when there's a lack of self-preoccupation, things are a lot simpler. So I'm just going to end with a little quote from, I suppose it's Rodney Smith quoting from Whitman, I think. So he says, "Do not ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive, and then go and do that. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive." So we've got to serve ourselves to come alive. But to come alive means to serve others. But we have to take that route.